Welcome to Ask the Experts, a monthly podcast taking on the latest questions around healthcare legislation and compliance.
Welcome to another edition of Ask the Experts. Today's expert is Crystal Bertner, Senior Compliance Specialist. Welcome to the podcast, Crystal.
Thanks so much, Shelley.
Crystal, my first question for you is, if a dependent child ages off the plan at the age 26, are they eligible to continue under COBRA?
Yeah, so if the group had 20 or more employees on at least 50% of their typical business days in the prior calendar year, then they are subject to COBRA in the current year. Now, if they had less than 20 employees, state continuation typically applies, and the requirements for that vary in each state. If the group is subject to COBRA, then a dependent child who ages off the plan would be eligible to continue coverage under COBRA for up to 36 months. Now, if the group is not subject to COBRA, but rather state continuation, this can vary state to state. So it's important to know if COBRA or state continuation applies and then reference state-specific resources like what we have available through our HR Research Center.
If two groups are commonly owned and there are 20 or more employees between both entities, do they qualify for COBRA? Or is each group considered separate when it comes to state continuation or COBRA determination?
When there is common ownership and a control group relationship exists, employees would be counted between both employers to determine if they're subject to COBRA or not. If there were 20 or more employees on more than 50% of a typical business day during the prior calendar year, as an aggregate between both of those entities, then both of them would be subject to COBRA for the present calendar year.
Crystal, can you tell me if a spouse's 36-month COBRA continuation will be reduced based on when the employee actually becomes entitled for Medicare versus when they are terminating from the plan?
If the qualifying event of the employee's termination occurs within 18 months of the employee becoming entitled to, meaning enrolled in Medicare, then the 36-month duration that the spouse can continue COBRA would be reduced from that date versus the qualifying event date of termination.
Can benefits be canceled for an employee that is out on maternity leave and has not returned to work?
Yeah, so this can get tricky sometimes. Employers can generally create their own leave policies that allow an employee to stay on the plan for a certain period of time for certain reasons, such as a medical-related reason, like maternity. As far as when the benefits will be terminated is going to depend on a few different factors. First, there's often job-protected leave that applies, such as state leave or FMLA, if that's applicable, that would require the benefits to continue for a specified time period. Now, aside from that, it's going to depend upon the eligibility that's outlined in the employer's plan documents. So this may include the employee handbook, the summary plan description or WRAP document, as well as policy documents from the carrier. Now, if there's nothing that is established in writing already, it's a good idea to consider if anything similar has happened with other employees in the past, and if so, what process was followed to determine if precedence was established. Another consideration is once FMLA is exhausted and the employee still cannot return to work due to a medical reason, the employer may have an obligation under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, to grant additional unpaid leave as a reasonable accommodation. So it's really important for employers to have an interactive dialogue with the employee that's on leave to get more details on whether that may be applicable in that circumstance. There are really just many variables involved here when it comes to a leave of absence situation and one little thing can change how it needs to be handled. So it's often best for employers to discuss with their own legal counsel before just ending benefits for the employee.
A level-funded plan was implemented on August 1st, 2024 on a 15-month rate guarantee. What does this mean for the PCORI fees?
So I would confirm this with the carrier or the TPA third-party administrator, but 15-month rate guarantees are typically broken up into two different contracts. The initial term would be for 3 months and then followed by a 12-month term after that. So if the plan was implemented on August 1st, 2024 with a 15-month rate guarantee, the plan is likely going to run from August 1st, 2024 until October 31st, 2024, followed by November 1st, 2024 to October 31st, 2025. But again, I would confirm that with the carrier or the TPA, but this is what we've seen before. And because it is split up into two different contracts, the carrier or TPA should be providing two separate PCORI reports, one for the first term and then one for the second term. And then just keep in mind, as far as when the PCORI fees are due, those are due by July 31st of the calendar year immediately following the last day of the plan year. So for the period of August 1st, 2024 to October 31st, 2024, that due date would be July 31st of 2025. And then for the second period of November 1st, 2024 to October 31st, 2025, that's going to be July 31st of 2026.
My next question for you, Crystal, do church plans allow the same rules as non-church groups when it comes to restrictions on reimbursements of the employees' Medicare premiums?
Yeah, so with very few exceptions, all group health plans, including those that are a church plan, must comply with the Medicare secondary payer rules, which generally prohibit the employer from paying Medicare premiums without violating those Medicare secondary payer rules. Now, if the group has 20 or more employees, the group plan would be primary and then Medicare would be secondary. In this situation, the employer would not be able to pay the Medicare premiums for employees without violating the Medicare secondary payer rules, as it would be seen as encouraging Medicare over the group health plan. Now, if the group has less than 20 employees, Medicare would be primary, and they could choose to set up a payment plan to pay for the Medicare premiums for employees if they choose to do so.
Can all plans use the CMS simplified determination method for determining if the group drug plan is creditable or non-creditable?
Many plans can, but not all. Generally, the simplified determination method is not available to be applied to those high deductible health plan or HSA qualified plans. One other exception is for employers who participate in the retiree drug subsidy program. These employers are also not able to utilize the simplified determination method.
When do the recently announced changes to Medicare Part D take place?
These changes are going to take effect in 2025, and they'll apply to prescription drug plans that renew on or after January 1st of 2025. For a calendar year plan, that of course means January 1st, 2025. For a non-calendar year plan, that will depend on when the plan renews in 2025. Just as an example, if the plan year runs from March 1st of 2024 through February 28th of 2025, and the prescription drug plan is currently creditable, it'll continue to be so until the plan renews on March 1st of 2025.
So what happens when the plan renews?
It depends. Because of the enhancements made under the Inflation Reduction Act that are effective on January 1st, 2025, some drug plans, of course, that were previously creditable now may not be. As far as who will be determining if the plan is creditable or not, that's going to depend. If it's a fully insured plan, typically, but not in all circumstances, the carrier will advise on that. If the plan is self-funded, which may also include level-funded plans, the carrier may not be advising on this, and it'll be up to the employer to do so. We do have a vendor that can help with making that actuarial determination for those groups who need it.
And what does this have to do with the October 15 deadline?
The October 15th deadline, that's not something that's new. Employers are required to notify participants by October 15th each year of whether the prescription drug plan that they're offering is creditable or non-creditable. That notice can be provided with the open enrollment materials or just after the start of the new plan year, but it just has to be provided before October 15th of each year.
Thank you for your expertise, Crystal. We hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. Please join us next month for another edition of Ask the Experts. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional.